T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, we're back. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN, and as promised, D.L. Hughley. He's an accomplished actor, radio host, comedian. His new book, yes, How Not to Get Shot, will be out June 26th. He's doing 5 shows in Memphis at Chuckles Comedy House this weekend. He joins us now. D.L., what's going on, man?
Hey, now, how you doing, man? Good morning.
Hey, everything is good. Appreciate your time. Lots to get to with you, but want to start with comedy. With everything that is going on in the world today, is doing stand-up and doing comedy easier than it's ever been, or is it harder to joke about everything that's happening in the world?
I think if you're probably starting out and you grew up in this environment, then it's probably harder, you know, because now I think comedy is done by committee. Like, even audiences, the way that they respond. Like, I did a gig at the Laugh Factory last night, and just to see how the audiences are kind of training comics, what they'll accept and what they won't, is a new thing for us. And for a cat that's been around as long as me, I really don't, it's not my thing to worry about what the audience worry about. I'm a manufacturer, so this is what I make. And if you want red cups, I got them. If you don't, I guess you probably will go somewhere else. But I think ultimately a comic's job is to say what he sees. And that's not kind of a communal thing. That's you got to be more of a lone wolf. Like for me, when Roseanne said that she was taking Ambien and made her sleep, like, I thought Ambien made you sleep while not hate black people. I didn't know that. So I'm going to stop taking NyQuil.
Because who knows what will happen. Dale, one of the things I've always admired about you, man, is I think you enlighten and inform. I come away from your shows, I think, a better person, as much as you tickle the funny bone. Was that always important to you? You know, how some comedians, man, they start out physical comedy, you know, mama jokes, and then they get to a point, man, maybe a crossroads where they're going to stand for something or they want to talk about societal issues. I've always sensed you like that guy, like Chris Rock. Has that always been you, or did you get to that point?
It always, you know, it's so funny because people talk about that all the time, but it's always been my perspective. That's, but I think now,
yep,
People's appetite is wet for that kind of stuff. Like, mm-hmm, when you look at a president now who says that he wants, you know, athletes to kneel for the national anthem. Even O.J. weighed in on that. Like, O.J. thought Colin Kaepernick was disrespectful for not kneeling for the national anthem. I'm like, hey, man, didn't you kill 2 people? Mm-hmm. Like, you killed 2 people, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I'd rather take a knee than a knife. So I don't know how you stand for the national anthem when you need to stop at a Bronco. So to me, it's important to say the things you see, like I said earlier, and to kind of at least be a mirror, like show, yeah, people what they, you know, people can take away from it what they like, but ultimately your gig is to be a camera and a mirror and show people what you see, and if they have a like-minded perspective, cool. If they don't, then that's cool too.
Mm-hmm. You've been married more than 30 years, man. What's the key to it for somebody that's been married 9 and wants to go a long time?
I'm on the road a lot.
Stop, bro.
Separation, huh?
Is that really, is that it? And then you come back and everybody's, go ahead.
I think it's funny because I think for me, it's always been that I married the only woman I could have.
Yes, sir.
I think, and that it's more up to them. I think she could have done a lot better than me, but I couldn't have done better than her. So
I heard that, brother.
I think you got to pick the right one.
No doubt.
D.L., I thought it was interesting last night. It's the fourth quarter. It's a close game. And Jeff Van Gundy stops and says, you know, LeBron has just not been great tonight. He's got a damn triple-double.
Yeah, you know, the thing about, like, I'm a huge Lakers fan, and I've watched a lot of great players.
Mm-hmm.
But I think LeBron obviously is among the greatest players who ever existed, I think physically, I think mentally. I think he's a dominant player. But one of the things I always wonder about is they often give him things and they take away from him. Like, I remember when Kobe won, they said, well, it doesn't count. The first 3 doesn't count because he won them with Shaq. Mm-hmm. So he has to come out and win 2. But I think that you have to say that if LeBron doesn't have Dwayne Wade, he doesn't win. If he doesn't have Kyrie, he doesn't win. So I think the difference between this series and last series was that Kyrie gave him a chance to have another just great player, dominant player, and a player you really like. Stephen Curry, who had a horrible game last night, doesn't do what he does because he's if Kyrie's there because he's chasing him around. Mm-hmm. So I think he's a great player, but I never liked the idea of he always, you know, goes. He never, like, he went to Miami, then came back to Cleveland. Now he may go somewhere else, but he's chasing, like, he changed coaches and teammates. And, you know, he's had all these teammates come and go because everybody's trying to appease him. And sometimes I like what Golden State did, where they just built a team, and the reason they can win is because they didn't try to form Voltron. They just built a team, and that team is built, and they fight like warriors. They're like the old Trojans. I mean, the ancient Spartans. They were bred together. They win together. They bleed together, and they're a real team, and they're going to be really hard to beat for a long time. I mean, when Stephen Curry can get 11 points,
and you still win,
Klay Thompson can get 10, and they still win, and your house, come on, man.
They kind of are like Voltron, though, DL. Hell, now.
Yeah, but they built him.
No,
KD came to a team that was already complete.
No question.
He made them, but they didn't. They haven't, you know, gone out and got all these pieces. That ultimately, they Draymond.
They built it. You're right.
Stephen and Klay.
It's a little depressing, though, right? DL, I mean, you mentioned you're a Laker fan, and honestly, if you're not the best team in the East, you know, you got to feel like you don't even have a chance, right? Like, it's the Warriors, and it's whoever comes out of the East, and it's probably going to be the Warriors anyway. Just it feels kind of depressing.
Well, you know what the funny thing about it is? I think Boston is a lot like that with all those young players they got right now. I think Philly could be like
got
that with
chance.
All those young players
no
they got
question.
Right now.
No question.
Got I think they, I mean, you look at Boston, still got draft picks, so does Philly. But ultimately, I mean, it's like, but, you know, the media and has put all these pressures on these. Even if LeBron left and went to Houston, I'm still not sure they can beat Golden State.
I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm still not sure they could be Golden State. Because it's two guys like Harden and James do the same thing.
Yep.
They both need the ball for a long time. They draw the, you know, the one thing about Golden State is that ball moves. They're the greatest passing team I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. That ball keeps moving.
They do things I've never seen happen.
No,
and I hate that.
Me
I know.
Too. We
exactly,
do too.
Yeah, no doubt. We are, of course, talking to D.L. Hughley. Going to be doing 5 shows here in Memphis at Chuckles Comedy House this weekend. Get your tickets. We'll be giving away today and tomorrow on the show. I want to go back to LeBron, though, really quickly, D.L., because I think it is so much bigger than basketball with him, and I don't think we talk about it enough. This is a guy who was anointed at the age of 15 or 16 as the next Michael Jordan, and there have been countless players who have sort of had that same label that have come through basketball, and they've washed out, or they've gotten on drugs, or whatever. And this is a guy who's had that label since he was a teenager, and I honestly think has surpassed that, right, on the court, you know, in business.
No, there's no, he's a guy who you had, you know, through the roof expectations for, and he exceeded them. And I'm talking about just the kind of player he is, but the kind of man he is. You could never do to LeBron James what the NFL does to football players. They could never tell him anything. Like, one thing I love about the NBA is that it's clearly the players' league.
Yes.
And football is clearly the owners' league.
You got it.
And I think LeBron James takes his takes his stardom and uses it to do a lot of. I don't know that we've had a player, an athlete, do what he's done since probably. You know, and you know, still stay on the court and all that. But he's like Muhammad Ali, only they didn't take his livelihood away from him. I think he like the fact that he will say, like he's openly said, him and Stephen Curry, that they're not going to the White House no matter what happens.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks out for causes. He gives money. He's very vocal. He's a leader on the court. Now, as far as court leadership and all that kind of stuff, I don't necessarily. I think that he's such a luminary that people stand around and watch him. Like Golden State moves the ball, everybody else waits for him, and at the last minute he'll dribble. At the last minute he'll decide if he's gonna go to the basket or kick it to somebody else. But in terms of what was expected from him, what he's delivered, there's no doubt. There's never been an athlete that has such high expectations in any sport and lived up. Well, except Tiger Woods for maybe a while. Tiger was the only athlete I think that had those extraordinary expectations and just met or exceeded.
Yeah, speaking, kind of piggybacking off that LeBron question, you know, why was Mike not like that during his career? Why was it more about the selling
Mike
the shoe?
Was
it the time? Was it him? Did we need more from him at that time?
Michael, right now, you know,
now,
when he was, somebody was running for, I think it was a black cat that was running. I forgot his name, that was running for Senate in North Carolina.
Uh-huh.
He wouldn't endorse him. And he said, white people buy shoes too, or Republicans buy shoes too.
Yep.
I think he was just a more craven man. He was a craven dude. He was driven by one thing, and that was winning. And that was it. And that was, and I think that when the argument comes up, who the greatest player is, obviously, you know, there are a lot of people. They're going to be just, you know, 3, 4, 5 people that are in that mix. But who the greatest humanitarian is not up for debate.
I got
and
you.
And I think that it's just a testament. Like, he didn't.
No
he,
doubt.
He was a very selfish dude, a great player. But I think you need to be selfish to be a great player. So that, you know, obviously you'll never see a great player that doesn't have some level of selfishness to him. But I think now Michael just was never – he would never say nothing about nothing to nothing about nothing, and to this day he won't.
And it was also a different time without social media, right? I just wonder how different it would have been if Twitter and Instagram and Facebook were around.
That's like Joel Osteen. Remember that flood happened and
yep.
he wasn't going to let those victims in until Twitter got on him. You are what you are. Like, ultimately, it doesn't matter the apparatus that you communicate from.
100%.
You ultimately, the human being that you are, and people would have found out, hey, we knew what Muhammad Ali did, and he didn't have Twitter. We knew what Jim Brown did, he didn't have
Damn
Twitter.
Right.
We knew what Kurt Flood did, and we didn't have Twitter. So, you know, I think that ultimately, it doesn't matter. The social apparatus isn't the important. People would have found, people know everything about, they know almost everything about him from, you know, or whatever else the media wants them to know about him. But I think that ultimately, he just wasn't that kind of. And there aren't a lot of people who are that kind of player. If you make that much money, you worth $1 billion, and you still don't say anything, it's because it's not in you.
Right.
You're not afraid of anything. It's not in you. It's not your perspective. It's not your vantage point.
All right. Now, you have a book coming out June 26th. It's called How Not to Get Shot. What can I expect to learn from this book?
It's called How Not to Get Shot and Other Advice from White People.
Is that true? That's what it's called?
It's called How Not to Get Shot, How to Not Get Shot, and Other Advice from White People. Because every time somebody gets murdered by a police officer, well, if he didn't run, if he didn't break the law, if he had just complied. So I remember I went on Megyn Kelly's show right after Philando Castile got shot. We had this huge argument. Right after that, I decided I was going to write a book with all the advice from white people. Like how to live, like now black people can't fall asleep at Yale. We can't go to Starbucks. We can't go to Airbnb, and we can't barbecue.
They cut it down on us, DL. They are cutting it down.
It's very funny. It's a very satirical look. Out of all the things I've ever done, this is my third book. This is the one I'm proudest of.
I thought I knew most things about you. What I didn't know in preparing for this interview was that you were a Blood. How did you get out, man, and what advice would you – because, D.L., we got plenty of it here in Memphis. We're a 65% African-American town. What advice would you give to these youngsters that don't think they can get out? How did you do it, and what would you tell them? Live.
You got to live.
Yep.
You got to live. Because the sad thing about it is one of the prerequisites for anything, I don't care what it is to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You got to survive. And that's that is certainly a lot easier said than done, but all I did was live. I got married. I started working, and I moved away from my neighborhood. But you ultimately just have to live. And the most difficult, that's the most difficult, between 15 and 25, that's the most difficult thing for a black man to do.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because you don't really believe that there's anything past what you see right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there is. And there is.
Yep.
If all you see is all you know is what you see. I remember you talked earlier about how I talk about the things that I see. Well,
yep.
I've always done it, but my perspective was so much more narrow because I didn't have a vast continuum of experiences to draw from.
Yep.
It's like living in a fishbowl. You can only talk within the fishbowl. But
Absolutely.
If you live in the ocean, you got a lot more stuff to talk about and a lot more experiences. And I think if these young brothers knew how beautiful. I'm not talking about this. I don't think it's a panacea or wonderful, but how many beautiful things there are in the world.
Yes, sir.
But they knew how what their potential truly was. But I think right now we live in a world that has never valued them, has told them that they were nothing. And when you believe that about yourself, like when everybody says the most dangerous phrase in for African Americans is at black on black.
Mm-hmm.
There is absolutely no such thing as black on black crime. That would mean they have to be most people are most white people are killed by white people. Most Asians are killed by Asians. Most Latins are killed by Latins. Most husbands are killed by wives. Most wives are killed by husbands. Crime is about proximity. It's not when you tell somebody black on black crime, that would imply that it's inherent in us. That criminality is inherent. The biggest indicator of crime is not color, it's poverty.
Yes.
So it isn't that black people live in those neighborhoods, it's that poor black people live in those neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And they tell you stories like that, and you believe it. There is when that dude shot up that, when in Vegas, shot those 60 people, mm-hmm. they didn't call it white-on-white crime. The only black people that get shot there, if black people got shot at a country concert, they were cleaning up. They got shot in the Keys. So, you know, Orlando, they didn't call it white on white crime. You know,
that's
Aurora,
true.
They don't call it white on white crime. You know, a dude walked into a church in Texas, killed 26 people. Mm-hmm. They don't call that white on white crime.
Mm-hmm.
They talk about Chicago for 15 months straight, now 16 months straight, their crime rate has dropped. Nobody talks about that because they got to use it. What they do is tell us stories about ourselves. We believe them and are so frustrated. We believe that there's no way out.
That's the truth.
We become what they say we are.
Yep. And the vision gets narrow. You got it.
So before we...
your perspective.
Go ahead.
Your perspective gets on there, huh?
That's it.
I was going to say, yeah, I was just going to go ahead and finish that thought. I was going to ask you, though, how many times have you been through Memphis, D.L.?
Oh, man, I've been coming through Memphis for so long. I've been where they had the pyramid.
You just chose the pyramid, huh?
Man, that thing is a Bass Pro Shop now, D.L.
I've been for a long time.
If you can believe it, man, that pyramid's a Bass Pro Shop, if you can believe it, man.
Yeah, it is a Bass Pro Shop. It's from Pharaohs to rednecks. It's hilarious.
Dig that. It's going to be should be a good time this weekend, D.L. Hickley going to be doing 5 shows at Chuckles Comedy House. D.L. was an honor,
man. We're looking forward to seeing you this weekend, man. It's an honor having you.
Thank you, man. Thank you, man. Y'all come on out, man. And remember, I'm telling you that book, How to Not Get Shot and Other Advice from White People, June 26th, it's hilarious. It has pictures and graphs and... It's very satirical, but we actually use statistics in interviews, and it's very funny. It's my proudest work, so y'all can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, pre-order it. It's hilarious.
I'm on it, D.L.
Sounds good, man.
Hey, thank you for this, brother.
Thank y'all, man. Thank y'all.
Yep. Take care.
He is D.L. Hughley. Appreciate him joining the show today. What a book title. I thought he was joking. I think he was serious. He's dead serious.
Did you see that argument he got into that? On that time, I guess when he decided he was going to write that book,
I did not see it. But
he can get pretty in your face.
Well, you
I
know,
love him, man. Like I said, he's lightning.
White people do love to give advice.
Oh yeah,
it's one of our.
You guys know how not to get shot.
One of our favorite pastimes. Oh yeah, like I mean, I was at a comedy club in New York. You know, and that's where all the famous ones come through.
Man, how much did you get done up there?
I got a lot done actually. I was at a comedy club.
Efficient with your time.
And
very cultured.
Yep, and. Frankly, there were some things they talked about that were just too uncomfortable for me to laugh about.
Really?
Yeah, like there were several black comedians up there who were making jokes about like getting shot by the police. And it's just like very comedy. I mean, cuz that's current topics. That's contemporary topics now, and it's
I get that.
You know, and then like, you know, one of the comedians was like
cuz I mean, just seriously, I mean, he's literally kind of making a joke about that. And I'm looking over at you, and it's kind of like you want to laugh, but you can't.
Yeah, like I can't, you know,
you
it's
can't,
not really funny.
A black
like,
guy making a joke about black folks getting shot,
yeah,
and the
like,
white guy can't laugh, even though it's funny.
Yeah, and one of the bits at the
I mean, I get it, but.
Yeah, one of the bits that a black comedian did, what was his name? Was it Sherrod Small? I don't know. I can't remember. He's a pretty big-time guy. You'd know him if you saw him.
Okay.
And he was like, white people, y'all, mass shootings, that's just your thing. He's like, you guys just love mass shootings. I don't get it. And it was uncomfortable because it was like kind of true. And, you know, that's kind
of. Well, I mean, it's one of the things comedians do. They try to bring levity to those heavy, heavy, heavy situations.
Absolutely.
And it gets uncomfortable at times.
It did. But it was interesting. And I know D.L. Hughley, if his stand-up is anything like that interview, it'll be great.
I'll do.
Be great.
He's
so
awesome.
I know you're excited for your $200
Saturday night VIP, baby.
Nice.
I didn't have to pay that much. It's not like that over there, dude.
Do you get to meet him or no?
No, I don't think I get to meet him.
So what does VIP include?
You're sitting right there on the front. Basically, you're paying to get roasted if he comes at you. But I try to keep a hat on, stay low profile. I just like that front seat.
You don't want to make yourself an easy target.
No, never. I did that. Nuh-uh.
Have you ever been roasted at a comedy club before?
No. I go out of my way to not get roasted. Gotcha. You want to go fresh. You want to go give them no ammo.
Bennett, have you ever been to a comedy club?
And stay quiet.
Yeah.
No heckling.
In fact, so DL, like you said, he's been coming to Memphis for a long time. And my dad told me a story. My dad used to do business with the Comedy Zone, which was on Overton Square back in the day. And he kind of, when he was getting his start and everything, he came through the Comedy Zone a lot. And he told me this funny story. DL, he was supposed to get off stage at like 11 o'clock. And his manager standing in the back of the comedy club with a flashlight. He does this at all his shows, this at his older shows. And he's flashing the flashlight saying, yo, you need
to get off.
Need to wrap it up. Dude, he went till 2 a.m. just because he was feeling the show. So I've heard his shows are like.
How in the world you got that much content?
Yeah, I've heard his shows are incredible. So I bet he's really, really good this weekend.
Oh, he is, dude. Anytime he's on, he's awesome.
What day are you going?
I'm going Saturday night.
Saturday night. Yeah. Night out of the town with Faith.
It won't. Dude, we go to the early show, 7:30, so we can get back, get the kid, gotcha. Babysitter's out of there.
All right.
We have to. That's married life, John. It's boring.
Married life with kids.
There you go.
With kids.
Married life with kids. Yes. You're right. I need to put that on there.
Yeah, so I'm holding that off as long as I can.
Enjoy.
Right, we'll come back. Jason and John, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.